Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to a Concussion Talk podcast, sponsored by HeadCheck Health. HeadCheck Health bridges gaps in concussion care through simple, powerful technology. Join organizations like the Canadian Football League, Track Factory Racing, the Canadian Junior Hockey League, Eastern Washington University, and Volleyball Canada, who rely on HeadCheck to improve communication and optimize care. Visit HeadCheckHealth.com for more. June is Brain Injury Awareness Month in Canada. And so, throughout June, this podcast will be hosted by Cassandra and Miriam of my local Brain Injury Association, the Newfoundland and Labrador Brain Injury Association, NLBIA.
So in today's episode, myself and my co-host Miriam, who you may remember from last year, are speaking with Jennifer, who's on Zoom, Nick, Carrie Lee, and Erica.
With episode 157, you said?
Yeah, 157. I don't even know if I can't hear myself really.
No one can
see you, Jennifer, so don't worry about it.
It's all good. We can all hear you though. That's great.
You can't have Jennifer on?
No, well, she's on, but she's on Zoom. I don't know if we'll be able
to... Don't worry about it. We don't need to see me today.
We will see you, yeah, because it goes.
That's great.
Yeah, so anyway, so... Those everybody's look at us. We're great. We're awesome.
So what are we here to talk about today, Nick?
Brain injury in general. So all the most we're gonna start off with the acronyms. Well, guess what? Should we start off with who has what?
I think this all came about because one day we were around the table and we were just all throwing out like different acronyms and talking about it, and we're like, you know what? We should kind of put this out there for people to hear.
That's good.
So then we kind of arranged to sit down and have a more of an informal chat about some of the acronyms that we were talking about. Myself, I'll start. One of the acronyms that I presented that day was an AVM, and that's what caused my stroke. So an AVM is an arteriovenous malformation. It's a cluster of blood vessels that lay inside the brain, and with high pressure, it can rupture. The vessels often have weak walls, for me, I was at the gym, and that high pressure caused that AVM to rupture. So then that was deemed a hemorrhagic stroke. You had something a little bit similar but different.
Yeah. I have CCM, which is cerebral cavernous malformations, and CCMs used to be called AVMs, but they figured out that now a CCM is a low flow blood and not a high flow. And CCM is not arteries, it's veins. So AVMs can be different, can aneurysms, can be bunches of blood vessels, can be arteries, can be veins, but CCMs are only low flow venous, and they look like raspberries, and they can explode like AVMs, but most of the time they leak. So people with CCMs, like Joyner, the runner, that's what she passed away from. Hers actually was very large, and she had a very large, and it was because of running as well.
Jackie Joyner.
Yes. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. And so CCM is hard to see. You can't really see them until you do a special MRI, And lots of times you go and you're talking to your doctor and you ask for an MRI, but if you go and have a regular MRI that most people have, you won't necessarily pick up a CCM. You'll pick up an AVM or a DVA, which is a deep vein,
DVT,
yeah. Deep vein thrombosis. DVA is very similar, but DVA is associated with CCM most of the time. So all these little letters, basically, AVM, CCM, DVT, DVA, it's all about blood vessels in the brain.
And so you were talking about the CCM as low blood flow.
Yeah.
So, but it's more likely becoming a stroke because of a hemorrhagic, or can the low blood flow create an ischemic stroke?
No, not necessarily.
Right.
No.
It's more so.
Like it's hemorrhagic all the time. Yeah.
And what's the difference between hemorrhagic and ischemic?
Hemorrhagic is like when you have a rupture or bleed into the brain, whereas an ischemic, it's like a blockage, something that's going to stop the blood flow into the brain. So then the blood flow into the brain being stopped stops oxygen from getting into the brain. And a hemorrhagic is an excess amount of blood that leaks, bleeds into the brain.
Causes your brain to swell, which is not a good thing.
Ischemic accounts for like 80-85% of most strokes. So most people have ischemic strokes. They're a lot harder to recover from, because once you lose that oxygen into the brain, your cells die. Whereas with a hemorrhagic stroke, it's not a lack of oxygen. It's kind of just like a bleed into the brain that causes pressure against a lot of the brain tissue. But once the body absorbs that, you have a better chance of recovering after a hemorrhagic stroke.
Right.
The only thing about a hemorrhagic stroke is you can be stroking for a very long time before you actually have really severe symptoms. Ischemic stroke, when you have a blockage, you know it right away. And that's maybe a good time to talk about fast.
Ischemic stroke.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mine was ischemic. So I dissected both vertebral arteries in the back of my neck through some form of whiplash, and then one of the two clotted arteries over the course of about 2.5 weeks moved up to my cerebellum and had a cerebellar stroke. So I've learned a lot today on
the different types,
what's happened to my brain with regards to tissue. So that's what happened with me.
Do you want to share with us?
I don't have any acronyms. Acronyms are not my friend. So I don't know where this fits in the acquired versus traumatic brain injury. I think we were talking about this before the recording started. Had a accident, hurt my neck, the neck injury then caused the stroke. So what would that be in our definition of acquired brain injury?
I think it's more of an acquired. It's strokes are not considered a traumatic brain injury.
Okay.
From my understanding, it was definitely like a bit of a gray area in physio school. I remember thinking does this really make sense to me? I'm not sure. But what I was saying, it was like, where is it that I lie? Because an acquired is an event after birth, an acquired brain injury. So an AVM was something I was told I was born with, but obviously rupturing happened after birth. So I was like, I'm really confused about where I lie. Does it matter that I was born with it, or is it just labeled like a stroke is an acquired? So yeah, it seems like there's a lot of gray area on the topic.
And I kind of found the whole, I had acquired brain injury, every traumatic brain injury is acquired brain injury, but every acquired brain injury is not necessarily traumatic brain injury.
Right.
And I had a traumatic brain injury. So I just, very simply, I just hit two of my head. So with my helmet, I should have made that point there. So the helmet on, but the helmet worked, but it didn't prevent the coma. But it did work, or otherwise, it'd be dead. So mine's just TBI, which is my acronym of choice.
Sometimes you'll see like MTBI, so
mild traumatic. Yeah, like, yes, yeah. Mine's S. I always write down STI because that's what I saw on the medical reports, but STI is not well used or recognized, or just like MTBI is mild, even though it could be moderate, you'd think, uppercase M for moderate, mm-hmm. I guess lowercase M for mild, mm-hmm. which is concussion. But I've told my story a lot of times about that, so I don't feel like I should really tell it more, but I was like saying the history, the helmet, mm-hmm. and looking at the question, Jennifer.
I did have a question. So I'm thinking about who would be listening to this talk, and I've had people come up to me in the last couple of weeks that have kind of expressed like, oh, I'm listening to the Concussion Talk podcast and I've learned quite a bit, and I want to let you know this is the kind of situation I'm going through with my own brain health. And so the question I wanted to pose to the group was maybe to just describe a little bit, because I don't think some people even get to the point where they know what they have, where they've had some kind of, I'm going to call it a brain episode. And they, through the checks and the balances or the diagnostics with their doctor, they haven't actually gotten to any kind of conclusive,
right,
this is what I have. So I wonder if we could, I mean, we can't diagnose people, but I wonder if we can speak to like some of the symptoms or things allowed us to get to the point where we got to some kind of diagnosis. Totally. That would be helpful.
And that becomes mm-hmm. really challenging too, Jennifer, for people, because even if the doctor is trying to investigate what some people are going through, a lot of the times if it's concussion related, it's really hard to diagnose because concussion doesn't show up on imaging. You send somebody for an image, it doesn't show anything. So a lot of the diagnoses of concussions come from like, you know, knowing the symptoms and screening for concussion. It's a lot of like, you know, assessments with your doctor or physiotherapist, mm-hmm. yeah. and things like that, that will determine. And so sometimes I find it really challenging letting somebody know that they have a concussion because they want some sort of test, some sort of image, some sort of diagnosis on a sheet of paper. And that becomes really challenging for people to connect with what's going on, not having that type of image or report that's like, hey, you have a concussion. It's more of like a subjective, objective type of situation where you're assessing what's going on. And a lot of those concussion-like symptoms, headaches is a big one. Some people who have like early stages or like a more severe concussion can have a lot of nausea and dizziness, a lot of disorientation, balance. They may feel sometimes like the room is moving, like they're not, like they're kind of on a boat or like things are spinning, difficulty sleeping, and a lot of like emotional side of things too, a lot of anxiety, feeling down, depressed. And I always tell people who are patients of mine that that's not your fault. And the reason being is because your brain is sitting in fluid. And so when you have a whiplash effect, and what I mean by that, your head having a fast, abrupt movement forward and back, that doesn't mean you have to hit your head to get a concussion. It just needs to move quickly forward and back. And so what happens if you think about, I always say, if you think about like something like a boat in water and the water's moving, the same thing is going to happen to your brain. It's going to slosh back and forth inside your skull. And what happens is you hit the front and then you hit the back. And at the front of the brain is your frontal lobe, which is a lot of your emotional center. So when the brain hits the front of the skull, that's where you get a lot of those emotional anxiety, feeling down and depressed type of symptoms. It's not your fault. That's what happened. And same thing with the back of the brain, that's your occipital lobe. and your balance center back there. So then when the brain sloshes back with the coop contra coop type of whiplash effect, when the brain hits the back of the skull, that's your balance and occipital lobe. So that's why things feel like you can't quite stabilize your surroundings. You might feel dizzy, off balance. That's because of the two locations of the brain that was hit from your skull. Like the impact, it's almost like a bruise type of impact. And then the axons, because you're going forward so quickly, the axons in the brain, they shear. And you lose that type of signals that are trying to flow in those areas of the brain. I don't know if that makes sense, if I explain it in as layman terms as possible. Yeah. But yeah, that's why you get those, a lot of those symptoms in the front and the back of the brain. Now, again, you would think that when you hit those parts of the brain, it would show up in an image, but you don't, because those axons that are in the brain are so small and you don't see those in MRIs and CTs, that when they shear, you can't see that sheared axon. So doing a lot of like specific exercises for concussion and following a lot of the concussion protocol and guidelines really help to allow your brain to rebuild those pathways and reconnect those signals in those areas of the brain.
I don't know. Doctors are much more aware now. Yeah. Back in the day, you got hit in the head and everyone just told you, yeah, okay, you saw stars, go on with your life. Doesn't matter, continue. They didn't really realize how serious a concussion could be.
Totally.
Yeah. So now, no, go ahead, Nick.
Especially when there's a lot, even like even smaller, Jennifer, look like your head's struggling to hear me.
No, I'm just leaning in.
Leaning back too much because I wanted to lean back in my chair. But when you like, if there's a lot, you get a lot of either concussions or subconcussive blows, like you get like the, like Jennifer's talking about the, like the axons tearing, sheathing, and stuff. So you can get that, but you can't get that as much with subconcussive, is because that's apparently a technical difference, even though they can't see it, but you know, it's a technical difference.
Yeah.
But there's like the myelin, there's the release of this tau protein, it's the whole thing, tau protein, the CT, but you can get like that. You really, you know, same thing as late onset dementia, which is like Alzheimer's. Oh, well, it's not like Alzheimer's, it's different, but it's just lead similar type of things people think about. But that can lead to some, if you get like these mini hits, you can lead to buildup of tau, which replaces the myelin, which is protects your axons. Mm-hmm. And that can lead to autism when you're older, when you're young, and that happens, you're like in your teens or 20s, that happens, you're thinking, oh, well, it doesn't matter, I'll be dead by the time I'm 40, you know. Right. But the thing is, we get older, you realize, I have a lot of life ahead of me. And to be like, just not feeling not this way when I'm 70 or 60 or if I'm onset, 50 or 40, you're like, you just realize that it's just that you really protect your brain and protect your wherewithal to really know what's going on, to really understand what's going on. And so, So I interrupted early there.
No, it's all good, Nick. And I like that you're talking about like neuroplasticity, because that's really what makes a difference. We've got June month out there, and anybody who's coming into new brain injury or living with brain injury, you know, we're out there to be able to help people, to inform people, to see if we can make connections for them, that kind of thing. But people with brain injury, whether it be congenital at birth or traumatic or acquired, it is something that you have to think about with aging, because your brain really is working overtime more than the general population anyway, because you've got to make new pathways for your brain to function on a daily basis. And those injuries people don't see. So you're living them, you're feeling them, you're working, you're doing your everyday thing. And it's not like a broken arm where people can actually see that you are not capable of picking up your coffee because your arm is broken or your wrist is broken.
Totally.
You can't work 40 hours a week, or maybe you can, but then you're exhausted, or you can't do 5 hours on the computer because you have to take a break every 15, 20 minutes.
Right.
Because then you're useless the day after, or that kind of thing. So
totally.
Keep our brains healthy there's all kinds of little things that we can do that are our walk that happened on June 3rd.
It happened, yes.
Yeah. No, I think you make a really good point because a lot of people that I help with concussion in the clinic, one of our interventions is allowing the patient to bring in any family members or closest who they're living yes. with so we can all talk together about what this person's going through because mm-hmm. it's so hard for people who are not going through that
yeah.
to just not see right. what you're going through right. because it's what I like to call, and I don't think this is a technical term, is the invisible deficit.
Absolutely.
It's yeah. all the things you can't see. You can't mm-hmm. see that somebody, like you said, wake up in the morning and they have double vision and
right.
you don't see that.
No.
So one of the interventions in the clinic is like, I always say, please bring in a family member that you live with, that mm-hmm. is close with you. Yeah. We can all talk about this 100%. Together because I think education around the topic is so important with helping people who are going through it,
it really is.
To get through it.
And support makes a difference.
Big difference yeah. because people, especially people with concussion and a lot of brain injuries, you're so easily aggravated. And it's just one of those symptoms. You're just so easily aggravated. And when the family around you understand that, hey, it's not their fault.
Yeah.
This is a part it's of what just they're your going switch through.
Doesn't work quite right.
Then, and they hear that from somebody else other yeah. than the person that's going through it. When they hear it from a professional, then the support gets so much better. So yeah. I think that it's really important if anybody's listening and you feel that this is what you're going through, please send this podcast to the person that you're closest with so that they can hear that these symptoms are not your fault. It's all a part of what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
I like what Kelly and Eric are both saying about the invisible injury, because I do have a lot of the invisible deficits, but I was lucky, I guess. My brain injury was so severe that it's obvious now, even now, that my walking, and when I couldn't walk, and so it's obvious that I had an injury. There was never any disputing whether or not I had a brain injury, because I was in a coma. I mean, so much I can say to do about that, and I couldn't walk, so I have double vision. Nobody can see my double vision or my speech difficulties, or if they didn't know me before, they wouldn't really necessarily know that I have speech difficulties. They think I just mumble or I slur my words. Or I'm
it doesn't stop you, Nick. It's
exactly,
all good.
Exactly. It doesn't stop me now. It feels weird to say it, but I'm kind of lucky that I had, that I was really injured, that it was apparent that when I was the toughest time, but I was going through a lot of stuff. But boy, I still am. But when I went through a lot of more intense, more, what's the word I'm looking for? I forget the word I'm looking for, but I guess intense will do.
That's another thing. Forgetting words, having a conversation. In the middle of a conversation, you're going, I was going to say something and I know what I'm going to say, but what's the word that I'm going to say?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so it's like that. So I was saying, when I was going through more intense, which I still don't forget the word, but it's not important word, but it's just a descriptive word, I think, but I have trouble saying descriptive, yeah, okay.
Got it now.
Gotta be slower now. That one. I was lucky that I was saying, but when it was so intense, when all this things were happening all at once and more of a shock me, there was never any doubt that I had a brain injury, so that I got support that way. But mm-hmm, you know, like Eric was saying, it's good to have support for people who may have symptoms that are not necessarily can't see or the double vision or hearing or sensitivity to light or speech.
Uh-huh.
And people can't see that unless they're inside your head, which hopefully they're not. so I think it's like you're saying, it's good to have somebody there to understand that you're going through this and that's normal too. This normal after an injury.
New normal.
Yeah. And I think it can go both ways when we say that you know, there's a lot of invisible symptoms that people don't see. So that means they don't understand. But oftentimes, like you said, in the early stages when things might be a lot more acute and more pronounced.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's so easy too for the general public to look at you and be like, oh, they have a physical deficit, and sometimes then treat you like you have a cognitive deficit.
True.
For instance, when I first had my stroke, and I know I may have said this before, I started in a wheelchair, went to a walker, but the stages of being in a wheelchair, specifically with a walker, I found that when people visually saw me with a walker, they assumed I had a cognitive deficit as well. They would kind of like baby talk to me as if I couldn't understand. And that was also very emotionally hard as well. Just because I had these physical deficits, I didn't like that the assumption was there that I had a lot of the cognitive deficits as well that went along with it. So it's so easy when you don't go through these things to make a lot of the assumptions based on, okay, well, based on how they look and how they present themselves.
Mm-hmm. That's why education is so important. Getting it out there, letting people know that the new normal is all good and everybody's new normal is different. And we all have to really just not give up and keep going forward. And you know, walking or swimming or sitting out in the sun or learning or doing a crossword or just something to keep your brain healthy is really, really important.
And I found for me, I lost my bank of my dictionary, my personal dictionary of words. I went through speech therapy and, you know, I had to rebuild a lot of that bank. But I still stumble on a lot of words that I know the meaning. I'm like, what is that word? Yep. I know this. Yep. I've said this before. Can't find it. But I've rebuilt a lot of my terminology simply through just reading. Mm-hmm. And once it's re-implanted, I can go back and get it. Mm-hmm. And I noticed when I started reading, then all those words were rebuilding again. Because I never had to look up the meaning of a word.
I always like a little light.
Yeah, the meanings are always still there. It's like I just can't find what that word is. Like, what is that word that attaches to that meaning?
Yeah.
So when I was reading, I never really had to look up and be like, what does that word mean?
Mm-hmm.
It just like, it's like, oh, that's the word I was looking for 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's restored and it's there now. I know it.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of restoring that information. And I know that's how it worked for me. So anybody who feels like they've lost a lot of their words, I would recommend picking up reading. It's just really good for a lot of brain injury, for like your eyes to follow the page, for you to be thinking about, you know, what is it the page is saying, to rebuild your bank of words. And oftentimes if you find reading overwhelming, just bring the level of the book down. Sometimes I've gone back to like what would have been primary school reading, very simple terms and words to use, and then build up from there. Like there's no shame in rebuilding your bank of words and your ability to read. If you're overwhelmed with reading, bring the level down, and that will rebuild quite quickly after.
You also have, like, I can't read because of double vision and issues with focus as well, and being able to concentrate on a task for a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole reading thing, I love the idea, but I listen to audiobooks.
Yeah.
Right. So I and I can't multitask as well, but I'll put in earphones and I'll listen to audiobooks maybe for 20 minutes, half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I might have to listen to that same part of the book a few times to actually get it. But I was an avid reader and I love to read. Mm-hmm. And because I can't do that right now, there's so many things out there that technology provides for people. Mm-hmm. You know, and some people like to have their little agenda where they write things down. I have my phone right now and I don't look at it very much, but I talk it and it talks back to me. So I'll talk my text, I'll talk my meetings, I'll talk all my tasks. And then at the end of the day, I'll say, did I do my tasks? And I'll be told that most of them, maybe I didn't get to, but some of them I did. So it's like, it's really good right now. Well, it's not good to have a brain injury, but in the world we're in right now, to have a brain injury right now, there's a lot of things out there that people can use, people can do. And
tell the machine things that's been developed. You're out there, you're like, because we're all here. You're on Zoom, so feels like you're kind of a part
You can tell she's taking it all.
I mean, there's everything on, you're more the host.
Oh, sorry. The talk to text, Carrie Lee, that you're mentioning was a game changer for me. I haven't quite figured out how to use it effectively, but most times when I text, well, before, like my left side is just kind of. So I swipe to text, and when you talk about that irritation that happens, like I find that my brain or like my thought patterns are moving faster than I can actually convey a text message, and that's how everyone wants to receive information now, is through text. So, that's certainly been a game changer for me, because I have reverted back to just wanting to call everyone, which is like such a, like, this is not the way the world works.
It don't is call good people though. Anymore. Calling is good.
Yeah. No, but like it allows you to just get the information out really quickly. So I think that's part of like it, the talk to text allows you to like avoid possible frustration points. You know what I mean? Like
totally. I feel that too, because like I even still have some like dexterity, fine motor problems with my left hand, and I find like to text, it just takes me so long to do it. And yeah, I find I do a lot of it with my right hand, but I'm trying to avoid favoring my right, and so I still try to use it when I do text. But it seems like I've kind of just like stopped texting. And like I'll call, or like my friends would be like, Erica, like you don't text me anymore, or and I'm just like, it's not that I don't want to, I care about you. It's just like it's a frustrating part of my day. It takes so much longer.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
I don't know how much we're doing for time, but one of the things that you were talking about was bringing back like words into your life. And I think one of the things that has been really hard, and maybe we can talk about it, is bringing back exercise into one's life. Because I know that you'll likely have all kinds of great things about what exercise does for brain health. Mm-hmm. But that's been probably one of the biggest challenges for me. Like big time. Cause like there's so much anxiety and trying to find the right people to understand your problems enough that like to go with you on things. I don't even know how to explain it.
What type of exercise would have typically done?
So I was like, I was into running, and I've foregone that entirely. The same you had a walk last year, and that walk heavily impacted my mental health in a positive way, to the point where I would attribute it to me being here talking to you now, because I was just very in a funky mental state. But they encouraged you in their walk to walk for 30 minutes a day for the month of July. And so that was huge. It's allowed me to think about other physical activities I could do that's not running. I haven't been told that I can't run, but it's just, it gives me anxiety, so much anxiety.
Like I walk on Saturday was great.
It was great.
Well, it was awesome. What a day, dude. It was so sunny.
It's just the start. I feel like this is going to be the start of my walking season again.
I found getting back to exercise hard too, and I found like a lot of it for me. Yes, there were physical barriers, but I think I had a lot more like emotional barriers. I, like I said before, I was a dancer and I would go to the gym and stuff like that. And I always told myself, well, if I can't do it the way I did before, or I'm not as good at it like I was before, then I'm not even going to try. And that was a hard type of mindset to break, because it got to a point, especially for dancing, where I didn't realize how much I loved something until the ability to do it was taken from me. So then I was like, okay, well, why am I being like this? Like, I'm sure I could do something. So I started back by doing like small portions of the class. And then I started to realize, even doing small portions of the class, say the first 15, 20 minutes, I started to realize, oh my God, like this is actually helping me. Now I can do 30 minutes. Now I can do 45 minutes. And like, those small wins were allowing me to realize I think I can get back to doing what I used to do. But I'm not going to unless I try. And I had to accept that I'm going to be okay with just trying a small bit. I had to kind of bite or swallow my pride. It's with really wanting to be what I used to be now. But the only way I'm going to get there is if by making small steps. And so that's how I started back. And I can't say I'm back to doing the exercises and the activities that I did previously 100%, but I do think I'm at least back to like 70%. But trying, when I first started to try, I would have probably said I started at like 10% of what I used to do. And I just had to build it from there. Honestly, doing that taught me a lot about patience, how to deal with my frustrations. Like, and so it was more positive than I realized, trying small steps. It allowed me to cope with a lot of the things that I was dealing with anyway on a daily basis, and helping me get back to what would have been my goal.
That's great. And that's where support comes in too.
Yeah.
Because the funk that you talked about, I'm sure everybody has experienced it. Anyone with any kind of brain injury, there's going to be a point where you actually do kind of accept that this new normal is actually the new normal. And it's hard to say, okay, this is what I used to be, but now, okay, I'm here and I have to accept it. And I have to do things on this plane of existence where I am right now.
Yeah, totally.
So, yeah, starting a little bit at a time. Like, again, you're a dancer. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. I never was, but yoga for me was really important. And then it took many, many years for me to get back to it. But I chair yoga started there and then mm-hmm. went to floor. And then even, you know, just movement for a lot of people, just to start with movement, sitting, movement, moving legs, moving arms, and then that support.
When you realize you can do those things, your confidence builds to try the next step.
That's it.
It's reassurance that I can do this and I can try to go a little bit further with. Sometimes you just lose the confidence. And sometimes for me too, it was like always looking at the light at the end of the tunnel. I was like, when is this going to go away? When am I going to get back to my 100%? I was always looking for the light at the end of the tunnel. And every day that passed, I was just disappointed because I wasn't there yet. And then I had to lose sight of that. I was like, okay, I need to accept that there's a very good chance I'm not going to get to the light at the end of the tunnel here. I may get to 80% or I may get so far, but I had to accept that I'm not going to be the 100% person that I was before. In fact, I probably think of everything I've learned, despite my deficits, I feel emotionally and what I've gone through, I'm so much more. But that's a mindset thing. You know, I feel like, you know, if you lose the end goal and break it down into like smaller sub goals, every sub goal you achieve, it's a win. It's a positive reassurance that I could do this. I can go further. And then you do go further and you take it to the next sub goal. And then that's a win and it feels good. And you take it to the next sub goal. So then you're constantly in this more positive mindset of like, I can make progress here, rather than the mindset of, you know, I don't want to do anything. I'm never going to get to that 100%, you know, and I do think it comes down to how you think about getting through your progress.
That kind of leads me as well. I'll ask Jennifer if she wants to say anything, but I'll, you can just finish up. No, don't speak. I say no. So we can see, say it so everyone can see you. Because
I'm good. That answered my question. Thanks, Nick.
Because Zoom responds audio, so people can't see you unless you say something. So for this is for people on YouTube, for people listening, then you know, whatever. but I was just saying, like what Eric was saying, reminds a lot of the end, but what Kaylee was saying before that, except for the movement part, but mindfulness meditation is where I think it's been really, really important to me.
Very good.
And it's not exercise, but it's like this. Not like being happy where you are. That's not really the point. Point is just
acceptance,
and then just just existing, just knowing that there's like a, and saying knowing and being and like accepting is all actions. But you're just observing yourself and in the world and how this is. Everyone is just like it's just together. It's like this means. Say it means nothing, but it almost does, but it doesn't. The meaning is you get to the higher points, which I'm not at yet, but apparently meaningness means nothing, but words do nothing, but like I'm not there yet, but like it's, but you can just like, and when you're talking like this, like you just kind of say stuff that's just fun to say. It doesn't mean anything, but
it's huge.
Just knowing that it's all good. It's all fine. Like it is what it is. It's like the simple. It's more of the mindfulness kind of unspoken mantra of mindfulness. It is what it is. But it's kind of like, so again, I just made that up too. So who knows? maybe like Sam Harrison will hit me to test on that, but don't say because I don't really know who I am, but. If they knew who it was, then someone would say, "He shouldn't say that. That's stupid." But anyway, I'll get Eric to defend me. I think that's probably good. What time now? It's like almost just make go perfect. And Sandra Miriam can send this out if you want to.
No, and I think it's really good that you're sitting in because you guys work with a lot of people in like the ABLE program. So you really can get our perspective and kind of understand how, you know, a lot of the people may feel that you're working with. So I think it's really good education for you guys to know, you know,
and
a
lot of this stuff. TBI as well.
And having something like this would have been so helpful when I was going through that experience because I felt so isolated and so alone. So having a resource such as this is going to be helpful for so many people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're not doctors, but we are out there and with so many years and education and all this stuff, there's a lot of things that we kind of picked up on and learned along the way that we can share with other people that they can then bring to their medical professional and say, okay, you know, this is what is going on. Because again, like I met someone with an aneurysm and they had no idea where exactly it was in their brain, what size it was, what kind of aneurysm it was. And because they didn't ask those questions, they obviously weren't told. But
sometimes you just don't know what to ask.
Right, exactly.
You can't articulate
exactly
what you're trying to get answers to if you don't know what type of questions to ask.
So, the NLBIA are out there.
And that's Miriam and Cassandra and all of us board members. But Miriam, Cassandra, you just want to just put us up, send us out. And then Jennifer, say bye or something so people on YouTube can see you again.
Sure. Well, I want to thank everyone for letting me join in on this conversation. I've learned a lot, so I'm sure that our audience will have learned a lot as well. So thanks, everyone.
Thanks for joining us.
Yes, and good luck in your class.
Thanks.
For Miriam and Cassandra.
So like Carrie Lee was saying, the NLBIA is here. So if anyone wants to reach out, please feel free to do so. You can email us at info@nlbia.ca. You can find us online at www.nlbia.ca, or you can follow us on social media. We're NL Brain Injury Association on Facebook, as well as at NL Brain Injury Association on Instagram.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered